I didn't hear that on the email. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our September 11th, 2006 City Council meeting. Tonight, I would like to dedicate our moment of silence to the victims of 9/11/2001. Thank you. Tonight, because of the date that it happens to be, I asked all of our emergency services personnel who could attend to please come in the uniform or not, and please
stand. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're very proud of all of you. Okay, announcements. First of all, I want to announce that B5 has been continued. We had a problem with noticing on that particular one, so what?
B1.
B1, and if you could either take it right now, which would probably be the preferred, to make a motion to continue that to the specific time of September, when it's 25th,
right.
And then you wouldn't even have to do it later on, and we won't forget.
Okay, may I hear such a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. So that one's been continued then. Other announcements. I think we got anybody from AGP manning the overhead over there? I've got a cleanup. Okay, John, right there in front of the laptop, there's a little notice about cleanup week. And this comes twice a year, and it's a good time to clean out your garage and all your stuff and your yard and everything else. This is going to be on September 25th to 29th. Your normal garbage pickup, you can have all this extra stuff, and you should have gotten a notice about that with your recent bill. If you didn't, call the garbage company and find out what the requirements are. It's a good time to clean out all the junk that you may have accumulated since the last one. Thank you, John. Another announcement, there's an exhibit running at the Morobe Natural History Museum, historical artifacts from the commercial abalone fishery at Morobe, which is really interesting. It's going to be running through October 6th, and they have a reception to open it, and it's going to honor the individuals who participated in this fishery, and that's going to be on Wednesday, September 20th from 5:30 to 7. And a videotape demonstrating diving and processing and still photos will be shown at about 6:15. It sounds really interesting, so might want to put that on your calendar. It's at the, I'm assuming it's at the museum.
Yeah,
Morobe Natural History Museum. There's what?
The display out at the Rock, if it's a fundraiser, is that different from this?
Yeah, that's different. Yeah. Okay, other announcements? Anyone? Melody?
Fee increases, these fee increases that have been predicted for residents in Morobe. And so I would certainly have you pull that out and mark your calendars for Monday, November 13th for a public hearing on raising wastewater user fees. The other thing, I went to a kickoff media event for the Harbor Festival the other day, and I was just blown away by the great organization they have now and the fundraising they're doing and the independence they're gaining, and the sureness, I feel, of Harbor Festival being a success this year. And one of the things I heard that day I just wanted to share with you, because I think it's important to notice when there's a real act of generosity, and that is that Zoe from the Tiger's Folly got up and announced that Tiger's Folly, in order to contribute to Harbor Festival and to create a great event this year, is giving rides, short waterfront rides up and down the waterfront there. They'll have on board live music. They'll have Dolce Robles Winery serving up wine tasting for people. And you get on it by going to the Harbor Festival, paying for your ticket there, get on Tiger's Folly, and it's free to ride on the Tiger's Folly. But the amazing part is Tiger's Folly is doing this free to Harbor Festival, free for the city of Morro Bay. So I just wanted to compliment Tiger's Folly tonight.
Okay, Bill.
This is on an entirely different note. We have had discussions here, and I guess a lot of discussions were held before the school board regarding a fence around Del Mar School, and I understand after a great deal of citizen input by at least a few citizens that the school board has decided it's appropriate to fence in an elementary school. So I was asked to mention that they're going to put a fence around at least parts of Del Mar School. And I, of course, never could realize that there would be an elementary school in the world that didn't have a fence around it, but I guess ours was one, and well, I know ours was one, and I guess now it's going to take its place in history.
Betty?
I would just like to remind the citizens of Morro Bay that Sunday bus service is free all this month on the bus that goes into San Luis and other parts of the county. And you can ride anywhere in the county on Sundays for free throughout the rest of the month.
Deb? Okay, we have another special presentation. So if I could have Randy Hickok from LS Power and Keith and Betty from Friends of the Fire Department and Chief.
Profile in the community as Duke did and continued to be a good neighbor. And we've always said that we would, and we're hoping to live by our word. And consistent with that, when in July the Friends of the Firefighters approached us and asked us about providing funding to help them purchase some new communication equipment for the firefighters, we thought that was a great idea. And the fact that today is September 11th just makes it a good time to be thinking of our service personnel and doing something for them. So with great pleasure, I will hand these to the Friends of the Firefighters, whose good idea it was, and ask them to make the presentation to the fire department.
I would like to thank LS Power, Randy Hickok, and for their generosity and the support of our community. I think this is a great thing, and I just want to say thank you to them. Chief?
I just want to quickly say thank you to LS Power, specifically Randy. I appreciate your efforts there, and the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, Keith Taylor and Betty. The Friends of the Fire Department formed a couple years ago, and in the short time they've been together, they've been out actively searching for grants and ways that they can help the fire department with funding and equipment and things. And we really do appreciate their efforts. These radios will really come in handy. We had some difficulties with some radios this last year on a couple of rescues, and we have some additional personnel that we are adding to our force and our reserve complement, replacing some people that have moved on. And the pagers that we've been using are old and failing, and these will really come in handy for providing modern and quality communications for our rescue services. So thank you very much.
Okay. And with that, we'll go to the closed session report. Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, council met in closed session on one item. This was conference with labor negotiator. Currently, the city is in labor negotiation.
Morro Bay. And this is a day that we generally think about and remember those who gave of their lives in New York, particularly the firemen, policemen, and other rescue workers. But I want to draw attention to an industry that I worked in, and there was 8 crew members, flight crew members, and their associated flight attendants that I know did their very best in those moments just before the terrorists took over the cockpits. I was an airline pilot for 35 years, and I know that they did their very level best as with limited resources at their thing. We have very little information as to what went on before they took over. But I know that those guys did their very best with the limited resources they had, and I just want to pay tribute to them and for you to remember that those guys were involved also. Thank you.
Thank you.
I I'm Betty Forsyth from Morro Bay, a very proud resident. And also, tonight, we have 9/11, but we also have a community that's very caring. We have a new business that comes in and is able to give us something that is needed for emergency services. We also have a caring community with Helping Hands, and they are going to have an appreciation celebration for the Teen Center. Now, the Teen Center is called Rocky. I did not know it was called Rockies, but it's got a good name, and it's the Teen Center. And on Tuesday, September 19th, from 5 to 6 p.m., we will have a nice celebration there. And in case you don't know where that is, that's 231 Atascadero Road across from Morro Bay High School. The public is invited. There will be refreshments, theme door prizes for the teens. Say that very carefully. And for details, please contact Grace Melton at 772-9093. I'm very proud that we have such a caring community with so many helping hands. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. As far as that Teen Center, remember, that is our former mini golf course. So it would be wonderful if people would come out and see what the kids have done to it and how much they enjoy it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor, Council, Chiefs, staff. First of all, I just want to say thanks to John Deronin and Mike Pond. They this weekend culminated a lot of their efforts. Pardon me?
Did you mention your name?
I'm sorry. Rick Grantham, candidate for City Council. Okay. The city has many issues facing us. Sewer repair on our 1950s vintage sewer mandated by the state, the costs are going to go up 20%. And it's my feeling that that'll double in the not-so-distant future. Public safety issues, replacement of old police vehicles, replacement of emergency fire vehicles. They're all pretty old. I was there. I spent the morning there today, and I was there the last week so I could hit both shifts. I wanted to get some feedback from them. They're currently storing their protective gear outside, which deteriorates the gear, makes it wet, makes it less effective to keep them from getting burned. Then we have Measure Q and the issues that surround it and the Oversight Committee. And I feel if an Oversight Committee is appointed, that there should be a representative from the Fire Department, the Police Department, and Public Services, along with citizens at large. Those are the people that should be on that type of committee. October 3rd is the debate that we have for the positions that are open this election. I look forward to a dialogue of solution, and I look forward to a good, strong, honest debate on October 3rd. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Bruce Corsaw. I'm a field rep with SEIU Local 620 that represents the miscellaneous employees here, and I'm here to represent a Mr. Jim Kroll. Mr. Kroll is a 25-year employee of this city, has put his life on the line several times in the line of duty as a harbor patrol officer. Earlier last month, Mr. Kroll turned in his retirement request and decided to change his mind at the end and was placed back on employment for a day and a half, then told to leave. It is our position that Mr. Kroll was involuntarily terminated from his employment here at the city. He has had no discipline for 25 years and has been a dedicated employee. We have repeatedly asked the city to at least grant him his appeal rights so he can try and appeal his position, which has been denied. We sent a letter both to the council and to administration requesting that they place him back on duty. He should be warranted. We're asking for the City Council to direct administration to either place him back on duty or give him his appeal rights. This will be the least economic way of dealing with this situation. So again, we ask you to take part in this and respect this man, especially on this day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joan Carter, citizen from Morro Bay. the Measure J referendum on the November ballot is going to set a precedent for the growth and development all over the county. Every city and every community in this whole county will be affected. These developers from LA and Texas gathered signatures. Many of those signature gatherers were not local, and put the initiative on the ballot. It can be repeated all over the county once, if this happens to pass. Then local government can't stop further construction of anything that a developer wants beside a community, saying that zoning regulations, that general plans, that environmental studies, traffic plans, and CEQA are not needed. That's what this initiative says. The Sunday Tribune reported that Caltrans figures have doubled in the past 2 years for the project. The developers won't pay their fair share for increasing retail and commercial activity, causing traffic nightmares. They will pay under 25% only, and the county is going to pay for the other 75%. So I urge people to vote no on Measure J. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Marla Bruton, North Morro Bay. I wasn't aware about hearing about Jim Kroll, but I'd like to voice I support this man that was here, Jim Kroll. I don't know if you remember in the 80s when we had the school kids out on the boat and they were going out the harbor and the wave crashed through. And all the children were in the water, in the waves, and the captain died. Jim Kroll was an amazing hero. Amazing. I mean, he was just scooping the babies up by five at a time, you know, I heard. I worked I'm a court reporter, so I worked the hearing at that, and I had several days of testimony and things, and vicious. New building going up around Times Square. It's the Bank of America building, and it'll be the first green high-rise in at least in America. And I would like very much for us. I have a presentation I can bring sometime and show you. But they're going to collect all the rainwater on their roof, use thermal for cooling. They'll have their own gray cycle water, collecting, taking the storm water away from the streets. They'll have the lights go on and off when you leave the room. The air that comes in, they'll filter the air that comes into the building, and then by the time it goes out, it's going to be cleaner than when it came in. And it's just amazing the things that people can do. They use mostly recycled and local products and union workers. And anyway, they expect that they'll maybe make about 75% of their own energy in the building. And I would love for us to get on the bandwagon with that sort of thing, since we are a green city now. Also, I have a nephew who is in Afghanistan right now, Justin Barnes. And he was in the service, and then he became a police officer. And then he got called back to Iraq, and he's training the Iraqi forces right now. And I'm getting emails from him. It's really heated up over there. It's so if people would just send their thoughts and love to our servicemen in Afghanistan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, friends, and friends at home. I'm Joey Ricano with the Ocean Outfall Group. I too send out my thanks to our servicemen on this day. As a former member of the United States Navy, I was a little bit young to get into Vietnam, so I kind of was an in-betweener. But I do want to make a special point to give my thanks to those who keep us safe. I'd also like to give my thanks to those who participated in our Talk About the Bay meeting. I'd like to thank Dan Berman for his great overview of the Morro Bay ecosystem, and Dana Ripley for showing us what was really happening in the groundwater in Los Osos, and Haiti DeBritz for her brilliant information on findings for toxoplasmosis. It's just a chock full of information, and you can watch it over and over again because you can only take so much at one time. It's really very enlightening, and it's very important to those who would make decisions for our watershed. I would like to say that although Morro Bay has not yet gotten its 301H sewage waiver reinstated that allows for the dumping of some of the dirtiest sewage in the nation, I heard recently from the Regional Water Board, and they tell me that it will be heard at the earliest December 1st. Morro Bay is trying to get the waiver again to dump the sewage. That's unfortunate. I hear statements from people who run the wastewater treatment facility saying things like there is no definitive evidence, no credible evidence showing that the outfall discharge is exacerbating Toxoplasma gondii, et cetera. But of course, it is not for us to prove. I could conversely declare that there is no credible evidence that shows that the discharge is not harmful. And if, in fact, the discharge was not harmful, then how come nobody else has them anymore? How come they've been shutting down one after another, and yet Morro Bay raises its head like a dinosaur with single-pass cooling and continued dumping of some of the dirtiest sewage in the nation, indeed about the very dirtiest in California, with the exception of San Diego, which has international complications. And I ask you once again, take a look at that TAB meeting, and I thank you for this opportunity to address you tonight, and God bless America.
Thank you.
Richard Sadowski, Ocean Outfall Group. A couple days ago, I think it was Friday, the collections grade 4 systems operator in San Luis Obispo City, his name is Bud Lance, hosted the California Water Environment Association workshop. And I attended that, and Matt Thompson gave us a little update on the WDR requirements for sewer management, infrastructure requirements, for private or public entities that have more than a mile of infrastructure. Also, Bud has 10 lift stations there in San Luis Obispo that he monitors with a relatively small crew. That we should be looking at those kind of areas. The city of San Luis is pretty on point there. So. My suggestion would be maybe send a couple more people there from the collection side. And then another thing I would like to say is the collection workers, they're part of your emergency staff as well. During emergencies, during spills, they're there not only for state parks, but also for Cayucas and all of City of Morro Bay. And I'd just like to thank all the collection workers that are out on the street. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Callahan, Cayucas Sanitary District, and I'm here today just to kind of clear up some things that were said at the last council meeting regarding Cayucas' flows that have been submitted over the years. Some inferences were made that Cayucas has not been submitting accurate flow data prior to 2004. Claims were also made that there were capacity issues that were identified as a result of a flow study that was done for Cayucas in context to the wastewater treatment plant upgrade. And based on my review of all this data, it doesn't support these claims. Flow reports have been calculated by combined pump run times and pumping rates to establish total monthly flows for these monthly periods. The district has recorded or has records that reflect the calculations used in the compilation of these flow reports. The totals are derived from the combination of pump hours and pump output, which were used as a cross-reference to flow meters that the district was using at the time. Over a period of time, our meters have run into some problems. We've done maintenance, calibration, things of that nature, and in the past we found that we needed to switch flow meters. Our current flow meter, which was installed in 2004, seems to be working fine. We run yearly calibrations by a third-party factory rep. We continue to cross-check these flow calculations that are submitted to the city, and they're reviewed by the city wastewater division manager, and we seem to be in agreement. So if anybody ever has any questions about any of that, I'm available at the district office.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to meet at the Rock at 9 o'clock Saturday, this Saturday, and then right across from the sewer plant on Atascadero Road at the end of 41, there's another location, and then at Morro Strand, San Jacinto, we're going to meet there. This is a big deal. It's part of the county. The county is cooperating. There's a lot of sponsors. Oh, the fourth place is not at 9 o'clock, at 8:15, maybe Rick. I just read about it in the paper. Rick can substantiate this or not, but at 8:15, the paper says he's ready, willing, and able to take people over to the sand spit to clean up. So that's in the paper. So that's 8:15, and maybe we should hear from him on that. 9 to noon at 12:30 with all the county sponsors. There's a big deal going on at Pismo Pier, and there's prizes, and there's bands, and there's free chowder and stuff like that. I did want to tell you, I got my hat on for Morro Bay Beautiful and my pin on, that Morro Bay Beautiful and us trashers are going to be part and parcel of this, and we will be there and supporting it, and we're going to be giving out pins and various other paraphernalia. So this Saturday, 9 o'clock, 9 to noon. Be there. Help us out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Nancy Johnson, a citizen of Morro Bay, and I want to read just part of a letter that Grace Melton received from Mr. Chet Zinn. Our first official act of business with the new city council was to elect Mr. Jack Cerflu as the new mayor of our city. We had many difficult issues to resolve during my time on the city council, but without a doubt, the most pleasant moment of all was when I made the motion to have the flower, the dahlia, to be named as a city flower. It was seconded and passed unanimously by the council. We were able this last August to reinstate the importance of the dahlia in the city. We had a wonderfully successful Dahlia Days. The new Morro Bay Garden Club, newly reorganized Morro Bay Garden Club, has started up again. And the Friends of the Library were very, very important in planning and putting on this event. We've already taken some steps to make it even bigger.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay. I'm speaking on Measure Q, Save Our Services. I would just like all the people out there to really look at this. This is an important issue for our little town, city. It will take care of our fire department, our streets, and our police and other services. And it's one way we can get a generation or revenue generation, which is really important. So I would ask everyone to really look at this, and if they have any questions, there's many of us on this committee to help explain it. And but I just want everyone to know how important this is for all of us, especially our fire department and police and our street repair. Thank you. And I have some things here if anyone needs them to support Measure Q.
Thank you.
Good evening. Roger Ewing, Morro Bay citizen. One of these meetings will get this microphone changed. All over the world, a global effort is being made to change the way we address our ecology and our environment. I don't think anyone appreciates less the fact that change needs to take place in how we conduct our lives on this planet. For millenniums, we've been doing things a certain way and not really giving consequence to the future. A couple of weekends ago, a meeting was held called Talk About the Bay, right here in Morro Bay. And a number of people came forward and expressed the need for change and gave us alternatives by which to make that change. And oftentimes, human nature being what it is, we tend to ignore the messenger and therefore disregard the message, which of course makes change a lot more difficult. I am one Morro Bay citizen who would like to applaud and thank Joey Ricano, Noah Smuckler, and all those who participated in making this meeting happen and making this event a success and making their knowledge known to us by which how we can make some change. How do those who made TAB happen, made TAB a success. And I was delighted to see our vice mayor introduce the meeting. And now that our city is awash in green signs, maybe he too sees the light. Have a good meeting, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. First of all, Rick, you want to confirm 8:15, yes, for the sand spit?
Yeah, good evening, Mayor and Council. We've done that in the past and be happy to do that again. It's always conditioned on nothing, no other major issues, or people have to be patient. We won't add staff, so we'll just provide lifts over there for the cleanup crews if they can be patient with us.
Okay. And Mr. Schultz, would you like to respond to the comment about Mr. Kroll and what can and can't be done?
Other than that, it's a personnel issue, so we can't discuss it in public at this time due to privacy issues, and it's not on your agenda. There's really nothing else to address at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Mayor, I would acknowledge that Mr. Corsall also wrote a letter and that we would respond to him in writing.
Okay. All right, thank you. Yes.
I'd just like to say I also attended the TAB meeting, which was sponsored by the New Times Magazine, Surf Riders, Eco Slow, Sierra Club, and probably a couple of other. And I spent the day there, and it was interesting for me not only to have the audience, which was over 100 people, listen to the speakers who are experts, but for the speakers to be able to hear each other. So there seemed to be a little bit of cross-fertilization happen from different parts of California to hear what's going on in other places as well as here. So I don't know if there will ever be another meeting again, but it certainly was well worthwhile.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. We're ahead of time, so let's go ahead with our future agenda items. Dad, anything? Betty?
Yes, I'd like to have a set a date for when we meet with the Planning Commission. I think we typically do that in the fall.
Okay.
And the second if there's other support for that.
I would support that.
All right. Yes, we'll go ahead with that.
And the second item is...
Thank you all for coming. Wait a second.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
The other, the second item is...
And what the permit was for, and then if I could just provide you a memo, and then if you still want to set it, then we can.
I would suggest...
I know they came back, and so I looked at it and said they could go ahead and do it, so they're in the second year, so I know it was at least a two-year.
I think it's got to be 2 years, because that was before I got on council. I remember that discussion.
Yeah, but I know for a fact they... questioned whether they could do it again this because it was coming up again and looked at the permit and said you can do it. Now whether it was a 2 or 3 year permit, I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, why don't we find out what the date is and then just put it on our tickler file for agendas.
Madam Mayor, could I ask about the joint meeting action?
Commission.
Who was the third? Was there a third party supporting
Melody,
me?
Betty, and myself.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
We have a fifth Monday.
Okay. Bill, any future agenda items? Melody?
No.
No? Okay. All right. We'll move on to the consent agenda. A4 has already been pulled. That's going to be continued on. Do we have to continue it or just... Okay. It'll come back. All right. Anyone want to pull anything else? You're kidding.
I'll pull 1, 2, and 3.
I didn't think we'd get away with that. 1, 2, and 3, pulled by Melody. Okay, can I have a motion approving A5?
So, second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right, Melody, A1.
So on A1, I know I've asked for these minutes to be amended, and I just wanted to pull it to thank the city clerk, who Bridget's been very helpful, and she even called me today to say that she had reviewed the videotape, and so I just wanted to acknowledge her great help with this, and I would move acceptance of A1 with the amendments.
Second.
Okay, we'll give Betty the second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, and A2?
A2 is the investment report from our finance director, Susan Slayton. And Susan and I have had some conversation. I called up and I forgot that announcement. Anyway, I'll slip it in here. I talked to her about this cash investment report that's attached to the back, this big Excel sheet at the back. And looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear about what the different fund numbers designated. And so the 001 fund is showing a deficit of, and I think, and Susan can correct me on this, but we talked about what cities generally probably should have somewhere. Do you remember what you told me about what you think cities generally ought to have?
I mentioned that most cities will adopt a policy saying that they want to keep a reserve of 10% to 15%. Right. I know that Morro Bay's is, I believe, 27%.
As a goal. It was always as a goal. But a goal in mind, of, as you were saying, between 10% and 15%. And that's because in an emergency, we eat up money right away. So I asked her what percent this reserves is of our general fund, acknowledging that this money can change value from quarter to quarter. It is right now at 2.85%. It is at an alarmingly low phase. I asked Susan what could we do to fix this problem. She said the only cure is to sell property, cure the deficit spending, and put the rest into reserves. And so, Susan, did you have any comment, or did I reflect accurately what we talked about?
No, you reflected our conversation very accurately.
Thank you. So it was just, I wanted to bring that to the public's attention and to the council's attention, that I think that's an alarmingly low number. And aside from that, I would move approval of A2.
Is there a second?
Second.
Right. I want to comment, too, that remember the reason that our reserve is so low. And it's growing right next to our fire department. We allocated $300,000 from that reserve to go towards getting those temporary buildings for our firefighters. And that was, you know, we looked at that as an emergency and exactly what our reserves should be used for. So that's why. I'm not saying that that would get us up to the ideal percentage. It wouldn't. But it's part of the reason that we are so low that we decided that this is what they're for and this is what we needed it for. So just to remember that, too. Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. And Melody, A3.
I pulled A3, which is the continuance of emergency conditions regarding the condition of the Morro Bay Fire Station. This is the $300,000 Mayor Peters was just talking about to provide a new home for the fire department, at least temporary. And I wanted to just remark, or maybe ask Chief Pond if he knows how things are going and when you'll move.
Deed is completed, and then we will have to go through the closing of escrow. And once that is done and the city has possession, I anticipate it'll take us about another 45 days to complete our move-in, because once the building is set up and in place, it's just a shell. Now we have to make it a fire station. So we still have projects such as moving our computers over and our networking system, running phone lines inside the building. We need to move our radio system over, our emergency alerting system over, antennas. There's still quite a bit of work to be done. We're even going to be reusing some of our existing lockers and cabinets on the walls at the old station. So we'll remove those and reuse those. So it's going to take some time.
Is there any disagreement between you and the contractor about that punch list of things to be done?
Not that I'm aware of. In fact, the individual from the company was with us when we established that list, and he actually pointed things out that we didn't catch. And,
excellent.
And
that's good.
So they seem to be more than willing to jump on and get those things fixed.
Okay. Thank you. And as I understand it, too, you have to have two full emergency systems running before you can make the move, right?
Correct. Right now, we no longer have an emergency generator at our headquarters fire station. That had to be moved down so that we could run the electricity to the new modular facility. So as an interim stopgap measure, we are using our pagers at night. In case the power goes out, our pagers will still operate and alert our firefighters that there's an incident. So we are having to accommodate little issues like that. And, yes, we will have to have both facilities semi up and running before we make that transition over.
It's not as easy as one of us moving to a new apartment or something.
All the finished work always takes longer than people expect.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, if I might throw something else out there, you might mention the fact that we've already had two incidents of vandalism on the new building and nobody's moved into it yet. People are now in the process of breaking windows. So if you see somebody doing something like that, my first thought would be to do something evil, but I guess the best thing to do is call the police department, so we'll avoid the liability. But we are having problems already, and it's unfortunate that you have some of those folks out there.
I'd move approval of A3.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, we actually got through our consent agenda and our future agenda, so let's take a short break, and we'll start.
I brought before you on August 24th, and the council voted to continue discussion of this item until this evening. A quick background on this is that as part of our wastewater treatment plant upgrade project, we are required to look at numerous alternatives, including the plant, the existing footprint of the plant that is there now, as well as any potential projects that may be viable that are outside that footprint. In 1995 and 96 and 99, the city authorized a study with Boyle Engineering to look at the feasibility of a wastewater treatment plant, actually a satellite facility in the Chorro Valley. And the item before you is to request funding to reevaluate those studies and determine the viability of that at the present time. And with that, I'll open it up to questions for council.
Okay, any questions for Bruce? Nope. All right, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter, please step forward.
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, and friends, Joey Ricano, Ocean Outfall Group again. And I would like to urge you to vote yes on agenda item B2. It's a good idea for us to allocate funds to analyze alternative locations for the wastewater treatment plant. As I've made clear in the past, I have reservations. I have concerns about putting a wastewater treatment plant like we did in the lowest possible spot. When you take a wastewater treatment facility, of course, you have to send your sewage there. That's where it gets treated, et cetera. And the problem with placing a wastewater treatment facility in the lowest spot, you know, is that you're basically calling the ocean a overflow. And it's not an overflow. It's a source of revenue. It's a source of life. So what we need to do here is take a look at alternative spots. Now, with AB 2701, the Blakeslee bill sitting on Governor Schwarzenegger's desk right now, there's going to be an excellent opportunity for certain municipalities in the area to be shielded from cease and desist orders, from polluting with whether it's septic tanks or whether how we're going to look at this. You have a watershed-wide waste discharge requirement that's going to become law November 3rd. That's a mandate from the State Water Resource Control Board. We need to start thinking regional.
And I thank you for this opportunity to address you.
Thank you.
Richard Sadowski, Ocean Outfall Group, Central Coast. I also would like to encourage the council to put funding toward this. Back when I was in college, we had a fluid dynamics class, and basically one of the things I remember was the longshore current running along the coast of California. And what we have here in a sterile bight, we have a very impacted area already. We have Diablo Canyon, which, by the way, dumps their sewage through the existing outfall that Diablo uses. Although it's minuscule in comparison, I did talk to Matt Thompson at the workshop meeting, and they might be required to also do a sewer management plan because they have more than a mile of infrastructure. And with that, there's a large countercurrent. That was one of the things that we learned. And this area here is very impacted by with the outfall from the sewage plant, with the outfall from the thermal waiver we have from the Duke plant, and or the old Duke plant. And I encourage that this council look at alternatives and minimize the impacts for our local surf spots. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Marla Jo Breton, North Morro Bay Ocean Outfall Group. I want to support the analysis being done on the Chorro Valley. I just went to Pennsylvania to a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, and what I found out there was that on the whole East Coast, they're all regional. One man in particular in Pennsylvania, he lives out where they're called boroughs, little small rural places. And he has a plant, he's the head of a plant that has 6 feeder. He calls the other communities his satellites that come in. What they've done there is they've formed a pollution authority. And so Bruce, if we were modeling after the East Coast, Bruce would be the pollution authority director. Suggesting and like prompting all of us there to use your universities, use your students, for their they can get work time towards tuition, or they can get credits, and that's what they're doing back there in New Jersey. I was going to show Melody the only model in the United States is in New Jersey around and the Chesapeake Bay area. But the college students with some professionals have modeled the entire watershed that goes to the Chesapeake Bay. And it's really thrilling and amazing to see these people. They're happy about being sewage workers. They're happy about what they're doing because it's exciting. And so anyway, and also the issue of water. Next month I'm going to a drought conference, and it's an international conference, and with global warming, it's going to become a big issue, and not just in the Sahara. So any time that we can reuse our water and our nutrients and put them back into our soil and our environment, we are making huge strides for the future, for future generations. So thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Mayor, Honorable Council, the cow just jumped over the moon. Bill Woodson agrees totally, absolutely with the Ocean Outfall Group. And I think that the council should authorize this wastewater treatment alternative analysis for the Chorro Valley. I was on PWAB in the past, and we talked about it, and I'm trying to recall some of the details, but bear with me and consider the source. But, first of all, I'm for tertiary treatment. And if you use tertiary treatment, I understand, if I recall, that you can put water, you can't drink it potable, but you can use the water on the land. And my idea, not mine, but at least an idea, was to use the water, to put the water down through Chorro Creek. And if you put the water down through Chorro Creek, what happens is that we have wells there. The city has wells in Choral Creek, and you have to be able to pump those wells. If I recall, you had to have a certain CFS of water down Choral Creek. Well, if we have the outcome
from more than 20 years ago, reclamation of our sewage treatment water discharge was a stated goal by even Mr. Warren Dorn, who just passed. The goal of the Clean Water Act is zero discharge. It's a stated goal in the legislation, which means you don't dump it in the ocean, you don't dump it in a creek or a navigable stream. Also, there's state law that also states that as a goal. We could do several things with that water, especially if we put it into the Choro Valley. It becomes a freshwater inflow into the Morro Bay National Estuary. It helps prevent saltwater intrusion into the water table. And you could even stretch it a bit, and if we created a wetlands up by the gun club, they could have duck habitat up there, and they could shoot their guns up there and go duck hunting when the season's here. Thank you very much, and I hope that you seriously consider this futuristic and very reasonable consideration of what to do with our wastewater. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Bring it back to council. Who wants to comment? Any questions for anybody? Okay. Comments? Bill?
Well, I was one of the lucky people last time the council discussed this. I guess that is 99. And I was in favor of the idea then, and I'm still in favor of it for a number of reasons. First of all, if we take the existing sewer plant and we go to full tertiary treatment, we've got to do something with the water. And it's great to say, oh, we can have the people use it for agricultural purposes, but you'd have to take it up Highway 41 a ways in order to find agricultural purposes. So I think it makes sense to explore the idea of going out in the Choro Valley. I have been to and seen projects where they took the tertiarily treated water and they actually piped it down into the aquifer rather than dumping it into the stream, and they recharged the aquifer. This was farther south from here, like Oxnard, but in a number of years ago. And, you know, it was a novel thing there because they did have saltwater intrusion, and this was a way they were able to fill that aquifer back up and push the saltwater back, actually. I don't know if that's going to be practical if we approve this or not, or whether we just would dump it into the stream, but as I say, last time we talked about this, I was in favor of it, and the only reason it stopped where it did is because initially we looked at it and found it wasn't economically feasible for us.
Any of the wastewater that goes to the current plant, or obviously some of the flow, I think, from Radcliffe or so would go down that way to this plant, and there'd be less flow to the wastewater treatment plant.
The original concept, I believe, was to take enough water out of the existing facility so that it could operate at full secondary treatment standards.
Right.
So you would take, and I believe the original analysis was about 0.6 million gallons a day, which is probably 55-60% of our total average flow.
Okay. So converting it from a plant that is having trouble handling it all to a plant that would handle it as tertiary, maybe to the level of reclaimed water? Reclaimable water, rather.
Yeah, the Choro Valley alternative was originally designed to be at least tertiary treatment. I think you'd probably, in order to get a creek discharge or potentially even a groundwater discharge with the basin plan requirements, you might have to put, as Mr. Boucher has termed, quaternary treatment on the back end. You would have to do some sort of salt removal, probably, mm-hmm. in order to meet the basin plan requirements.
And then we already own this land in the Choro Flats area for this plant?
One of the areas we do. I think they were going to look at two different areas.
Right.
So one, yes.
Okay. But that's not inside the city. That's inside the county, right?
Correct. That's in county.
Okay. And so how do we get on the county getting hold of this project and wanting us to obey their regulations?
Madam Mayor and Council, I don't. We would need to go through their permitting process.
You would need to go through the county permitting process.
Right.
I'm sorry, say that again, Bruce.
If we did a package plant or something out in the valley and it was outside of jurisdiction, we'd need to go through the county.
Okay.
permitting.
Thank you, Bruce. And then, Mr. Amble, and then my last question, Mr. Keough, would be, it's always been suggested to us that we become regional. So how would the Choro alternative create a regional perspective other than Cayucas? Is there any chance that this could be regional, like, I don't want to say exactly the name, but is there... could this Choro alternative enhance our possibilities of actually being regional in a way that Ms. Bruton talked about?
I think that's a loaded question.
Original Boyle reports in 96 and 99 were paid for with CDBG money, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so there wasn't any money out of the general fund to pay for those reports.
I think Mr. Boucher was sort of the lead on those studies when they were put together, and I think he would know better than I as to how that funding source was allocated.
Okay. I remember as being grant funded, both studies.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Betty?
Just to follow up on this discussion with other communities, at the TAB meeting, Mr. Ripley is the designer of the proposal that's being put forward by the current CSD. And I asked the question, you know, would you have the capacity if the Cayucas and Morro Bay went in with you, where they would have the plant, actually, and we would send them our effluent? And then we would take care of the solids here. And so we would just pipe over. And then he said that they have been approached by more farmers than they can handle that would want our water, not our water, any water, and that they are willing to pay for that. So that's a real money source right there. I don't know how much you can get for it, but they have more requests than what the plant would produce, that Los Osos would produce, so certainly the other. And I said, well, would you also have capacity to handle two more communities? He said yes. So I think that's another discussion. I don't think it can be part of this, unfortunately, this discussion, but I don't know why that door should be closed. But depends on, I guess, what goes on for them. I don't have any questions per se, but I have a few things that I would like to be sure to be included in as a minimum in the study, because the language in here talks about, on your last page above the conclusion, where it talks about the limited cost is because of the scope of work would be limited to updating and refining the information contained in the two already existing Boyle's reports or studies. So I want to make sure that, because some things have changed since then, and I spoke with Mr. Ambrose at break, that since CMC is now discharging into the creek, how would that impact us? Does that make the creek off limits? Just period. And then is it not wiser to go ahead and, like, put the water directly into the ground rather than into the creek? So I hope that the study includes the beach. I think the third thing that I had a question about was that it did mention the hydrology, and I don't know if that's part of just the updating, which it probably is. So I guess my big two concerns are the discharge and self-sufficient plant, and then I don't know if they can look at other sites, and I don't know if the original study, because it wasn't in the summary, gave a cost of how much it would cost to buy the land at the other site. My two concerns about staying where we are, and then I'll pass it on to Mr. Baxley, is one, we're in a floodplain, and I think we need to get out of the floodplain. The second is we're on the beach. I think we need to get off the beach. But if we go up to our flats, are we still in the floodplain? That may or may not address that need. So that's why there may be other sites, visual as well, to not put it in the flats.
Okay, Dad?
Yeah, I'm in favor of looking at a tertiary facility for two reasons. One, I think at some point in time we're going to be told that tertiary is the treatment standard you will apply. And I also believe that, as staff said in the report, that there is a better chance of having grant funding when you're working on a tertiary option rather than secondary. So I'd be in favor of this.
Okay. Well, I am too. I think that we're looking at a major construction project, and it ought to be the best major construction project for the future instead of just the most convenient. So I agree with Betty's points of having the study include those two. I think I got two out of there, the CMC effect, mm-hmm. and also whether this would be the primary project instead of the satellite project. And was there another one? Or was it just the two?
It kind of bounces off the CMC as like, would we inject the water into the ground?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we could, because Los Osos is doing its own project. Could you then say, okay, would it be even cheaper to just pump it over to Los Osos and then bring back what we would want to put in as our own reclamation?
Well, I have the same hesitation that Melody does in getting involved with that whole thing, but at the same time, they seem to be finally getting on a positive track. So if there is any possibility of something good coming out of that, perhaps it could be looked at on the edges or something. I'm a little afraid of it, too, I got to tell you.
Madam Mayor, I watched the talk about the Bay meeting in its entirety on television. I wasn't able to be here, but double at all yet, or what the cost would be. So I think we ought to do this as it's stated. Then when we find out what this says, we can always talk about going forward in one direction or another, or making it bigger, and go from there. Because we don't even know if this is viable at this point.
Well, I guess my question would be, if we include the items that Betty suggested, is that going to, do you think, up the cost, or can we still do it for the $45,000?
Well, I would think you could do it. I think they're going to have to look at just roughing out a scope of work. I think they're going to have to review costs, regulatory environmental concerns. The agencies are listed in the executive summary. They're going to have to look at discharge requirements. All that stuff has changed, it's kind of flexible and changes over time. So a lot of that stuff, I think they're going to revisit. And really, I think at this point, we were talking at break that you're going to get a more detailed facilities master plan for the inside the fence alternative, because we've really, the council and the district really decided to focus their attention there. I think what you're going to get here is you're going to get the first, you're going to find out whether the balloon still floats 8 years later. And if so, then I think we're going to have to come back and revisit it in more detail. But the goal, I would think, would be to get the information, enough information, to allow you to make that decision when the alternative selection process is put forward.
Mm-hmm. Melody, do you have something?
Are we thinking of going back to Boyle for this job?
No, actually, I think Boyle has been hired by the sanitary district as their district engineer, so I think that might not be a...
Might be a conflict.
Might be a conflict of interest.
Okay. But whoever we go to, we'll use the Boyle studies and just build off those.
Okay. Definitely.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Ready for a motion?
Ready.
Well, this would have to be step one. I move that the City Council direct staff to include the alternative analysis and allocate funding consistent with the requirement of CEQA.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. 5-0. Okay. We like that. All right. B3, an ordinance number 520, adding sections to the Morro Bay Municipal Code regulating short-term vacation rentals. First reading and introduction. Bob?
Yes, good evening again. I'm back to you pursuant to your direction. I've made certain changes to the draft ordinance. I put an emphasis more on, as opposed to 500,000 and 2,000, which seemed awful steep. But looking for further direction, that's just something I did after reviewing some of the comments. And then I think that's about it that I've changed in it. So I'll open up to you guys for any questions, or open up to the public for comments, and then see if we can get the first reading done.
Okay. Any questions, Council? Nope. Okay. This is a public hearing. Please come forward.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and staff. Nancy Johnson, vacation rental owner. First, I would like to thank Mr. Schultz for his ear. He did a wonderful job of listening to our concerns as vacation rental owners. There are just a couple minor things in, really one minor thing in this new draft that is different than the first. And the thing that he's taken out is the statement that says that vacation rental units that are regulated by this shall be in residential zones. That was in the original report. It no longer limits this to residential zones, and there's an issue with that, and that being that those of us who have vacation rentals in PD overlay visitor serving areas are really being discriminated against versus the trailer parks, RV parks, and hotels that also exist in the same area with our vacation rental. And in discussing this with Mr. Schultz, I know he said that, you know, they were worried about, you were worried about the TOT, and I understand that. And I was thinking maybe just a sentence in there somewhere that said that all short-term vacation rentals are required to register and pay their TOT so that the ordinance itself would still deal with vacation rentals in residential areas, which, as I understand it, is where there have been issues. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask her a question?
Sure.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Serving services that don't come under this ordinance.
I think Rob.
I might be able to explain it a little bit better. Yeah. I'm kind of blending a couple different ordinances maybe together, but I'm trying to simplify it. You know, obviously our main concern was to make sure we get TOT. And we want to make sure we get TOT not just in residential areas, but in other areas. So when I was reviewing the first draft afterwards, I thought, wow, you're only applying this to residential zones have to get this permit. And so in the Johnson situation, they could actually say, well, I don't need a permit for my place because it's not in a residential zone. But what she is saying, though, now what you've done is you're really somewhat discriminating, because although she's not in a residential zone, she's being treated differently from a hotel. Let's suppose a hotel has a noise issue. We don't have the ability to penalize them under this because they're not a condo or an apartment or a single-family residence. And so it's you're giving them a different, we're giving them a different penalty mechanism than someone else in the visitor serving, for example, or the RV park, which doesn't fall under this. So it's a little different. One of the things you could do if it's a concern is just under C, under 5.47.060, see the short-term vacation rental permit holder in residential zones will be subject to penalty as set forth in Morro Bay Municipal Code 5.47070 in the following incidents. And then you're only allowing penalties in the residential zone if you think that's an issue. If not, you can leave it the way it is, and we can see how it works in a year and see if we really are having that problem.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
I tend to agree with the conversation, but there's a difference between mobile home parks and hotels in the fact that they usually have someone on the premises to deal with problems as they come up, whereas a vacation rental could very easily have an out-of-town owner who is going to find out about it 3 or 4 days after the problem or a week. And, you know, that is a concern. The places that have responsible local management companies, as long as somebody knows who it is, so like the neighbors could call them, and I don't know if they have on-call people, but I think one of the concerns we addressed last time was the fact that you have somebody having a
hopefully, and knowing the Johnsons, they won't have this experience, but I agree with the observation that there will be no one on site for these facilities, even if they are in a different zoning. One item that's not included in here, and I don't know that we settled on it, so it's not a wonder that it's not in here, and that is, does the council want to take up the idea of a radius around vacation rentals? Do we want to grandfather in those that are currently exist, but know that we want to try to maintain neighborhoods and that we don't want five or six in a row. And therefore, if there's new applicants, will we have a 200-foot radius or something of that nature? So I would hope we could have that discussion.
Okay. Anybody else have thoughts on that one?
Well, I kind of like that idea, but I would have liked to have had it at the first attempt with this ordinance.
I think I kind of addressed it last time in that you'll see it in quite a few, but I thought it might better to take baby steps at it and at least see if the noise and that doesn't cure it, and then if we have to come back in a year, review it and see after next summer if this hasn't cured the problem. But you do find other ordinances where they have so much within a 500-foot, you can't have another one. So, you know, we can put that in and come back if it's something you'd like to see.
But if I could just jump in on that, excuse me for a minute, Mr. Barrett, it wasn't so much in terms of noise or even parking, but as much as neighborhood character, that we don't want to end up with what has been traditionally in the past, like the beach track, where you have two people on a short street and that's all that live there full time. You have six empty houses around you. And I don't know if that's the kind of town we want to live in.
Madam Mayor. I think the way to address that, though, in a year, that's why you probably need to grandfather in the one so you can see how many we have in a year. Okay. And then know whether we need to put it in. Because I think if you said right now, all right, 500 feet, we'd be inundated with them and trying to figure out who is first and who is not after they've been doing it. So I think we can... Certainly, if council wants, that's something that could go out in the notice so that people do get in and start, is that council will consider possibly in the future limiting the amount that are allowed if that's something council would like to do.
So that's a good idea to get an inventory first and then see where we are.
Madam Mayor, I would hesitate to a commuter, however.
Okay, Dan?
Yeah, one comment. I think that we should enact the ordinance that we have in front of us with the idea that we will come back and look at it at least within a year and look at the two issues, one brought by Nancy Johnson and one mentioned by Betty, in terms of do we want to change it at that point in time after we have a look at it.
The one thing that wasn't addressed here is the idea of parking, and I'm just wondering, when they come in for their permit, is there anything that we can give them suggesting that they encourage their tenants to keep their parking on their property or something like that? So, can we have some guidelines?
Yeah, those
that
are
we
guidelines.
Give to them with the permit?
We are working on the guidelines further. I wasn't ready to present a new one.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I'm working with finance on the forms. Before those go out, I'll send those out to you just to get your any comments or any formatting, especially with Melody. To see if she can help on, you know, that's the graphic one, and we can put in there about making sure your tenants try to park and not, you know, all the little things we want to put in that.
Okay.
And also it has a couple of state laws that you have to abide by.
Okay. Anything else?
I want a motion.
Sure.
Move we approve Ordinance 520, adding Section 5.47 to the Morro Bay Municipal Code.
By number and title only.
Oh, all right. Number and title only.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
Madam Mayor, would it be appropriate to make a second? Oh, sorry. Excuse me, Mr. Hendricks.
Hi, Madam Mayor. This is Ordinance Number 520, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, regulating short-term vacation rentals.
Thank you.
Yeah. Would it be appropriate to entertain another motion now, asking, as Mr. Baxley said, for this to come back in a year, or would you like that motion made when it comes back for the second reading for an evaluation?
What do you prefer?
Then I would move that this ordinance come back for review 1 year from its second reading, or 1 year from when it's adopted.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Are you going to mention for any specific purpose?
To see if it's working, I guess. You want to make it more specific? That would help me.
I would probably just show, we would show how many permits were issued, whether our TOT is up from it, and what complaints and what fines were issued.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Second.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Citizens' Option for Public Safety. It's also known as the State Law Enforcement Supplemental Fund, or SLESF. They come up with all these acronyms. Legislation requires that the police chief prepare an annual report to council on how the funds are proposed to be spent, and a public hearing is required, and that is what is before you tonight. Police staff has met and prioritized our needs for this grant spending. The proposed spending this year is mostly on funding some part-time personnel that were cut in last year's budget reductions. These positions include funding for reserve officers, part-time support services technician, part-time operations technician, which handles property and evidence and equipment, and some funds for part-time dispatching. The remaining funds are proposed to be used to replace the communications center logger recorder, which has been very problematic. It's old, outdated, and it's been failing lately. And it's a very crucial piece of equipment for recording all communications in the dispatch center. The rest of the funding will be spent on other miscellaneous equipment replacements. So we recommend that you hold the public hearing and adopt the police department's spending plan and the attached resolution 4306.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the chief? Over here? No. Okay. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward.
I just have a Jeff O'Dell, Morro Bay. I just have a question that I'm sure the chief can answer, but is there no way we can work a car out of this, a new patrol car?
We'll ask him after.
Just a silly question. Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else?
Ken Vesterbelt, resident of Morro Bay, also a mayoral candidate. Obviously, this is a very, very important grant, and I know that you're going to make the right decisions on this, and appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We'll close the public hearing. Anyway, can we get a car out of this?
There's not enough funds remaining for a car this year.
And we need those people a lot. Okay. Comments? Ellie?
Yeah, I'll make a few. I'm not sure what the center logger recorder is. Is that a thing that's needed by law to record all the dispatches that come in?
Yeah, what it is it records all of the radio transmissions and all of the phone lines in the communications center and other phone lines in the police station.
But it's required by law or ordinance or something to have? Just for anyone who might have read this staff report in the public, could you describe to me where those camera systems are?
Well, currently we have an old, it's an old suitcase type of remote surveillance system that we could set up at a crime scene to remotely videotape on a 24-hour basis, you know, unattended. Let's say we have a burglary series going on. We used it once before down at the harbor when we had a burglary series going. We covertly set this up, and hopefully we'll catch somebody on video. The problem is the system's so old and the components are broken that we want to try to replace it with more modern digital technology that we can operate. There, the technology's out there now where you can operate it from a remote location to where you don't have to sit next to it and turn it on and off. So our hope is that we can find one that's reasonably priced that we can replace our old one that doesn't work anymore.
I didn't know we even had surveillance cameras in Morro Bay. And then this is money that comes to police departments from the state. And then I was wondering, are you accountable to anyone at the state for how you spend this cops money? Like, do you send a copy of this staff report up to them to let them know? Because they talk about this frontline policing and all. Do you send it up to them?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we just completed our 05-06 annual report. And it's a report, it's a form that is sent. The cops grant is coordinated through the local county. And so all the local police departments have to send their annual reports, which includes a breakdown of how the money was spent, a copy of the finance department accounting of the COPS grant fund. And then what they do is they have an oversight committee. They have to go before the county board of supervisors and show that all the cities spent them according to the law and all that. And here's all the reports from the cities. So we are required to submit those annual reports. And we just submitted ours for last year.
Thank you. Bill?
Well, actually, the fact that we're looking at this is more or less pro forma, because all we can say is yes or no. We have no authority over how it's spent, and it basically goes into its own fund rather than the general fund or anything like that. So essentially, if we want the police department to have this extra stuff, we say yes. If we don't want them to have it, we say no, or we delay it. So I'm in favor of it.
Betty? I'd like to see us have something different. I'd like to see this allow us to put back the high school officer. So rather than several part-time people, I'd like to see a full-time person. And I don't. That would be my suggestion.
Dad?
I'm in favor of the resolution as it stands. This is what the police chief wants. This is what we should give him.
Yeah, I think the difference is when you have part-time, you're not worried about if the grant goes away next year, you lose the person who's got a full-time position again. So, and I think that obviously we need this to save on overtime.
I've a desire for, and so I would want to entertain that.
Madam Mayor, could I comment on that?
You may.
I agree with Councilman Windholz that that's a very important position. The problem is the when you add the salary and benefits, it exceeds the COP grant fund. And because it's only an annual grant, there would be no way that we could actually go out and hire a new police officer and tell them they only have a job for a year. Nobody would want to come with only being guaranteed a year's worth of employment, because if the COPS grant went away next year, we would be in the we'd have to let the person go, and it would be very difficult to recruit somebody and tell them that they only have a job for a year.
Could you look at an older retired officer who might be interested in that kind of a position?
Well, generally you run into a PERS issue, because if they're retired, they're only allowed to work 960 hours a year. That's what we're doing with our reserve officer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but would that is that enough to cover the school year, or is that short of a school year?
Well, that's very short, because they can only work, when you break out the 960 hours, it's only half-time. It's a part-time position.
Are we ready for a motion?
Sure.
I move that we adopt resolution number 43-06.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Sure. Opposed?
No.
Okay. I'm opposed. All right. Moving right along. D1, consideration of adding a new trolley stop along the 200 block of Atascadero Road. And this has Mr. Hendricks' name on it. But is Janine coming forward to talk about it?
Thank goodness Janine is here tonight and ready to respond.
Okay. Thank you and good evening. At your August 14th meeting, the council directed staff to come back for consideration to add a trolley stop on the second route in the 200 block of Atascadero Road. And the reasoning for that was that there's motels that are either existing or RV parks that are existing or under construction or have been approved for construction, and there would be a visitor serving component that is something the trolley is originally designed as part of its mission statement to achieve. Attached with your staff report is a copy of the current brochure, which shows both Route 1 and Route 2 trolley stops. And just real briefly, the Route 2 takes about 1 hour to complete the loop, and every half hour it arrives at the two transfer points to Route 1 at City Park and on Market Street near the Centennial Light. The passenger, then it's at the driver's discretion to do so. So that happens quite often. And then it's occurred at the location that was talked about at your August 14th meeting. There are some issues to consider when deciding whether or not to add a new trolley stop to the route, and I've listed some of them here. I'm not going to go through each and every one of them. Things like the overall fit with the trolley's mission statement, the ability for the trolley to safely ingress and egress from the stop in order to board and alight passengers, capital expenditures associated with any purchasing of new equipment, such as signage that would need to be placed up, any potential ADA issues or elimination of parking issues, as well as route headway, which is the time it takes to complete one loop. And without going through each and every one of these, basically all of these issues, none of them are completely insurmountable. There are ways around things such as the headway that I know is can be of concern. With it getting anything longer than an hour, you start having to worry about riders the travel time for a rider and them feeling whether that's too long for them to want to use the service. The majority of the users are visitors to this area who more often than using it as a form of regular kind of public transportation, as we're more commonly known it, to get from point A to point B quickly, they use it more as kind of a touring ride. When they get into town, if they haven't been here, they ride the trolley and they get a feel for what the town looks like and places where they want to go. So the headway issue may or may not be a breaking point, but there are some local riders, there's about 30% who are local riders, who they may be that group that uses it to get from point A to point B in the shortest amount of time available. So there's kind of a balancing act there. But as I said, I don't think it's something at this point that is completely insurmountable. There is a current North Coast Transit plan that is underway, and they're reviewing the dial-a-ride as well as the trolley. One of the issues they do talk about is headway and whether there's any sort of recommendation that would be coming forward to consider changing how the service is run, maybe splitting it up into three routes so you're shortening that headway, or some other creative way of being able to shorten the headway while still being able to serve the whole community that we currently do. And a motion at your pleasure.
Okay. Any questions? Bill, I'm going to let you start. Thank you.
I don't have a question. I just I have some comments when we're ready.
Okay. Any questions first?
I have three questions. Okay. Could you give us the exact location of where you're thinking this would go? I noticed that you said that it might be advisable to have a stop on each side of the road in order to avoid some ADA issues. And if that's true, then a supplement to that question would be, then do we have enough supplies and storage to handle two stops?
We do have enough supplies and storage to have the information kiosk and the trolley stop sign. So if council desired to add a stop on either side of the street in order to minimize the ADA issues, that can be done. The location of the stop is where Mr. Councilman Pierce was talking about. Is there's an RV park, and I don't remember the name. I think it's Morro Dunes or something like that, or Morro Bay. And you have the teen center, which is on the other side of the high school. And then there's kind of this sort of open space. I think there's a house that's there, and then there's that RV park. Mm-hmm. That's the location that's being talked about.
Putting it in front of the residential home.
No, putting it near the RV park that's currently open.
The newest RV park.
Yes.
Okay. And then across the street,
probably somewhere
in front of Flippo's.
Kind of that, where the old Flippo's site, right there by Lila Kaiser Park.
Okay. And then my last question is currently, because the thing about the timing, if a driver doesn't have a passenger that rings the bell to stop, and if he sees no one at the bus stop, does he necessarily have to stop, or can he just keep on going? Or how does it happen now?
They basically, at formalized stops, they stop at each stop. Because if you have a passenger on board, somebody may not be waiting at the stop, but there may be somebody on the trolley who you don't know whether or not that's the stop that they're going to want to get off at. So that's where adding more formalized stops can add time to the route. But in this case, you're talking maybe a few minutes, so it may not be as critical of an issue for the headway at this point. If you're starting to consider adding four and five and six stops along on the same route, mm-hmm. with each stop you add more time, yeah. and then it can become an issue.
Yeah. I took the bus in the city
them or right in front of them to let them know, to let their patrons know that there's no formal stop here in front of the building, but the trolley does go down this street, and if you do flag it down and it's safe for them to pull over, they can do that. And that's a way of kind of alleviating the adding the extra time by having a formalized stop.
Thank you.
Any questions, Thad?
Yeah, Janine, we're looking at a stop already at the end of Atascadero Road, is that right?
There is one currently at the end as you make that curve around. At the end of the beach area.
And that's where they turn around?
That's where they turn around, yes.
Okay, and so this would add two more half mile this side of that one stop.
I'm not sure of the distance. It's probably the equivalent of a couple of blocks walk,
right,
maybe.
Two blocks.
Thank you.
Okay, comments? Bill, you want to start?
I think it's appropriate at this point to consider putting a stop there because you're going to have two motels and two RV parks clustered together. I don't, at this point, unless staff comes back and says, oh, you got ADA problems, I think we only need one stop. I don't think we need to put one on each side of the street. That would solve some of the time problems. I know the folks with the new RV park there have said that they would even be happy to contribute to put a bench in. So people could wait for the trolley. The idea of telling your businesses to tell the patrons that you can flag them down, unless you had a sign in every motel room, it isn't going to happen, and I don't see the RV folks, unless that's in part of a packet they get, it isn't going to happen, and I think it's not that much of a big deal to throw a sign up there that says trolley stop. And so I think if we're talking about moving people to come in with RVs especially and try to keep traffic off the Embarcadero, this is a very nominal way of getting people around town, getting them down through the middle of town and down on the Embarcadero. And for the most part, if they're coming into town, they've got the jumping point every half hour rather than an hour. And I could see where if you get back on the trolley and you want to go north and it's headed south, that could be an hour. But for the most part, I think the trolleys are used as an attraction rather than a part of transportation where you're going to meet somebody and time is critical.
Melody?
Well, I think it's a no-brainer to put a stop down there. And I don't think it's just because of the
concern that where there's two crosswalks right now, mm-hmm. but where their locations are, it's kind of the stop that's being proposed is sort of in between the two. So like you say, right. If there's somebody across the street, chances are for them going one way or the other to the crosswalk to cross mm-hmm. versus just crossing right at that moment, they might take the shortcut and not use the crosswalk, and that's where you can get into some trouble. So that was where the suggestion of having the stop on both sides would help to eliminate the urge to want to do that.
Yeah. So I would be very much in favor of this, but with one on either side, as it makes sense to me.
Okay, Betty?
I, for safety reasons, I too think two stops are fine. I would also look at maybe eliminating the very end stop. The bus would be going down, or the trolley would be going down there anyways, and if someone wants to get off there, they could, but it is kind of a dead end, and if it's only two blocks, people could walk down there. But I don't know how that would go with the RV guy down there.
Ben?
The trolley has to stop at the end anyway to turn around, don't they?
No, they just go.
They do turn around in that area.
At the very end, before you get to the creek.
But yeah, before you hit, go through the back little way into the
So we're going to take Betty's suggestion, then you'd simply move one of the kiosk things up and put it on the other side of the T.
Well, my concern is if you eliminated that stop, you would be eliminating service to a segment of the population you're now saying that you would like to serve further up. So I don't see that eliminating that one stop is going to make a real difference in terms of the time. And we do have a lot of people who get on at that stop down at that end that are going to the beach or are coming from the RV park that's down at that end. So I would rather see that one be kept.
And since we have enough equipment for the other two, then it would simply be a matter of adding those.
Yes, and even if we do add the two stops, we still have some additional signage and information kiosks if one of them were to be damaged or any one of the ones along both routes are damaged, that we can replace them without having to purchase a new one.
I can support that idea.
Well, I can too. I don't think that the little bit of time it takes when they turn around and stop is going to hurt the route that much. I think we can handle it, and people will adjust. I mean, we're talking, that's fine.
Well, I think there's some costs and negotiations involved, so I don't think that we want to necessarily direct staff to accept it. But
I just ask.
Yeah, I would certainly be in favor of talking to them. Okay. We can get them to do that.
All right. And I wanted an appropriate quote for tonight. Nancy Castle gave me one. This is from Maya Angelou. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again. With that, we're adjourned.